C1B 1 and 2.
Number 2B.
So, can you see that which is called material evolution, those useful wonders, etc., we can look at them either through the senses or through science. That's the science of being that will tell us that we should not look through false instruments of understanding, but through the right instruments of understanding through science. If we look at the material evolution as we know it in the world, which we cannot deny, if we look at it through the senses, they testify a ascending evolution. And if you look at that very same material evolution over the 3 billion years through the lens of science, we see there not the material evolution, but an evolution in spite of matter, an evolution where matter is yielding, and yielding more and more, until finally we feel that evolution can free itself of matter. We can overcome gravitational laws, we can fly, we can calculate a million times quicker than a year before, we can do all sorts of things suddenly, so that the restrictions of matter yield more and more and more, and matter plays, actually, the limitations of matter yield. See, this is the tone that you will see through the chapter on the science of being. Constantly this sense that matter yields before spirit, gives way before spirit. So that for the science testimony, we do not have a material evolution, but actually a material involution, matter giving way to spirit. These ideas are somehow being touched by some of the biologists today. But you know, when you read the argument between biologists today, they really get at each other. They really fight each other. They take the very opposite standpoint and both get the Nobel Prize. That doesn't matter. But you take a biologist like Professor Birch in Australia, who is well known in that field of biology. He defines creation or evolution just this way as I've been telling you. He says, creation is the lifting of restraints on matter. See? That's creation. When the restraints on matter are lifted. Mrs. Eddy would say, when we lose the finite beliefs about matter, if material beliefs are yielding. So he sees that. He says, really, that the history of nature is the history of the actualization of possibilities. It is, and now you see it, what creation is, or evolution is, it is the progressive removal of restraints on matter. You see, it only needs a little trick in our approach. Instead of looking at matter and see how matter always becomes more and more organized and therefore more and more material, we actually could see now what happens is that matter loses its limits. Because what is matter? Matter is actually limitation. You cannot have a material object that is unlimited. The moment we limit something to finite forms, it's matter. It has finite dimensions. So everything that has finite dimensions is either matter or a material belief. So they begin to see that actually matter is yielding in evolution and not becoming more and more organized. I take another contribution from the field of natural science, which has always impressed me very much, though that book is now 30 years old. But when I compare his contribution to the contribution of the modern natural scientist, I still feel that Dunuy, in his book on human destiny, gives the most spiritual interpretation of material evolution. I just present a few of his leading thoughts because they explain so much what Mrs. Eddy tries to show in this chapter. He says, just a few statements, he says that the most fundamental laws of natural sciences are actually insufficient to explain evolution. So he starts out and says, material laws cannot explain evolution. Because, you know, according to the material laws, there should be just the opposite happening, namely the second law of thermodynamics, which says everything goes down the drain until you reach the point of absolute death, where everything stands still in the world, there is no more motion, no more any processes in the world, everything is just dead, dead as a dodo. And material science cannot explain that evolution goes exactly in the opposite way of negative entropy, and becomes really more, and has more and more life aspects in it. Therefore, he says, therefore, there must exist another law than the natural science law, more powerful and more intelligent than the law of matter. So you can see that there must be a higher level at work that is, how can you say, responsible for what's going on the lower level. He says, this points to the existence of a dynamic, intelligent, supra-physical, therefore metaphysical being. So he can see that because evolution cannot be explained through the laws of matter, that there must exist a higher level and a higher being, a metaphysical being. He goes on and says, as the new stages of evolution unfold in a direction contrary to the material so-called scientific laws of natural science, the existence of a higher law must be admitted. No intelligence is inherent in matter. He says, but there is an intelligence, namely a telefinalistic intelligence outside of matter controls matter, and you have the sense of mind over matter. Therefore, it is a telefinalistic intelligence. You know what the telefinalistic intelligence is? A telefinalistic intelligence is intelligence that is working towards a far-off great purpose that has a great goal in view, an intelligence that is not blind to the future, but works towards a high goal. So he begins to see that there is that kind of intelligence in the work. And therefore his conclusion is, it is not the body of man that evolves, but the spirit that evolves. Can you see, he finds here some kind of a same answer, that he says, actually we have not an evolution of matter, actually we have an evolution of spirit. And that evolution of spirit is responsible and is responsible for what's going on the material level. Yes. Can you see this? Again, he would show now from the point of view of natural science, that great point that Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out in this chapter, that the idea dissolves illusions, that the idea takes away the limits of matter and of illusions, and that therefore the idea is bringing forth a terrific evolution, and therefore it's the idea that has a Christ. I want to show you this very point in another field of thinking today, in the field of philosophy, where there is also here and there a philosopher that sees the right dimensions and really therefore overthrows the old way of reasoning that we have been used to. I quickly go through some of the main ideas of the philosopher Martin Heidegger. Martin Heidegger is the well-known philosopher in Europe, and he's also well-known over here. And I want to introduce you now this new concept in the field of philosophical thinking. It's quite impressive for the world. It's not so impressive for the Christian Scientist, because somehow he knows that. But it's good to see, perhaps, how explicitly these people try to bring out the same ideas. So, instead of considering really the material evolution as in natural science, we are considering the evolution in thinking. We know that the cavemen didn't think the same way as we do today, so there is an evolution going on in thinking also, and philosophy is concerned with investigating the evolution of thinking. Philosophy in general is investigating our ways of thinking, therefore the rationality of our thinking, the logic of our thinking, how we should think, and things like that. Philosophy usually goes out that there is thinking, and takes it as an axiom and builds on that. Philosophy doesn't question the very fact that we are thinking. But Heidegger was the one who was questioning first that. And he was not so much interested in what we think, but that he first was asking himself, how is it that we think at all? In other words, what makes us think? You see, he goes one step further back. He goes back to what Mrs. Eddy would call to that spirit cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. See, he did the same as Mrs. Eddy. He said, I can't just accept that there is thinking. Why should there be thinking? Who makes the thinking? Can I just go to the biologist and say, because there is a brain, you are thinking? Because that brain starts you thinking. He said, that's not the philosophical question. So he asked, how does it happen that we think just that what we think? What makes us think that what we think? And therefore, how can it be explained that we are not thinking something that we are not thinking? How can it be explained that we are only thinking just that which we are thinking and not something else? Who is going to decide on that? Isn't that a philosophical question, huh? A deep question. Up to that point, up to Heidegger, apparently this question was not raised, was not really asked. But he was asking this. Why have so many thoughts remained unthought? That's his great question. Because he could actually see that the history of thinking, the evolution of thinking, is actually a history of showing why has something not been thought before, and why is it that suddenly something is being thought? Who makes that decision? What is the cause, the source of thought? So it comes to the following reasoning, which is quite interesting. He says, we never arrive at thoughts. I wish the Christian Scientists wouldn't learn that we never arrive at thoughts. Because the Christian Scientist in general always thinks he can arrive at thoughts. He can think. He can define what he wants to think. That's what he thinks. And that's not true. That is just ordinary philosophical reasoning, but that is not Christian Science. And you know why. We know why. We have learned it in the chapter before, where she says that ideas of mind, capital M, are transmitted by divine science to us, that they sort out what is true and wrong in order that we have spiritual thoughts, divine concepts. So spiritual thoughts are the outcome not the cause of thinking. They are the outcome, the effect of the divine mind, having ideas, and these ideas, when translated to the plane of the thinking process, become spiritual thoughts. So spiritual thoughts are never the cause. And he could see that. He said, we never arrive at thoughts. Thoughts come to us. He could see there is another source. They come to us. He says, thinking is dependent on the fact that something that has to be thought presents itself to thought. So that's his terminology. I just a minute before explained it in the terminology of Christian Science. So he could see that thinking is dependent on the fact that something has to be thought and therefore comes to thought. You see, he puts everything back into a realm that is above man, that is beyond man, into a divine realm, we would say it into the realm of the divine mind. There, all the information, data are right there, and is sent out from time to time with new ideas, with new vision, bringing mankind further and further spiritually. So he goes on and says, the fact is that thinking, therefore, has a history. Now we come to the evolution of thinking. And that history cannot be traced back simply to chance. You see, you could see there is law somewhere and order somewhere in a big divine think tank that is in mind, capital M, so that we cannot trace back the thoughts of the philosopher, the thoughts of the age, just to an accident, that just by accident somebody was thinking something which has not been thought before, but had remained unthought before, that doesn't happen by accident. He also says that doesn't happen just because there is a psychological constitution in the thinker, and that it depends on the thinker that he begins suddenly to think something. He doesn't even accept that. He doesn't accept that it comes out of sociological factors, so that when a sociological situation appears in a nation, that new ideas, new ways of thinking appear. He said not even that is the cause, because he cannot perceive that a sociological situation is the producer of ideas, that matter is the producer of ideas, of new thoughts. He just couldn't see that, nor can we. But he says, but it depends on the fact that that which has to be thought has itself a history. It's quite terrific. If we can translate the tonality of what he says into Christian Science terminology, we can really see that what he is saying here, that really that which we are thinking in a developing sense through time, sorry, through the period of 100 years, 200 years, 1,000 years, what we are really thinking is only possible because there is a history of thinking, that thinking has a history which has its cause, its origin in that supra-human realm of information. It is not people that make history. It is not people that begin to think new thoughts and bring in new thoughts and therefore bring about a history of thinking. He doesn't accept that. And we couldn't accept that either, because we see it must have a spiritual cause for those lower things. And the lower things are thinking. The higher things are ideas. He goes on, therefore, there is a history of being, or a history of being sent. In the German, you can, with the German language, you can express that very easily, because history, the term history, is Geschichte, and that term means geschickt. If you split it up, it means to be sent. that history is to be sent. It is not people that make history. History is the outcome of that suprahuman, suprapersonal mind that sends ideas. The Christ is always said that which is the divine message from God to man, and he sends a history of thinking, steps and stages of thinking. He sends the days of creation. Let there be first day, let there be second day, let there be third day. That's the history that is sent. And therefore he shows that in the Western world that history has been sent in epochs of thinking, which means now, don't be shocked, which means now that the great thinkers we ever had did not think the way they did out of free invention or out of free choice. They were thinking the way they were thinking because they had to think the way they were thinking. They had no choice. They are always a channel, a messenger for something much bigger than what they are. It's always mind that was talking to the prophets. The prophets were not such big guys that they produced out of themselves new vision. They were transparencies of that history of idea, and they could spell it out in terms. So he says Plato thought of being suddenly as ideas instead of things. But why did he think, for instance, suddenly of things as idea? Because he had to think that way. And we see, therefore, that not people, not philosophers, not great thinkers were making history. The history was a sent by God, by the divine mind, and was exemplified through the thinkers. That's why Mrs. Eddy also felt it doesn't really matter if Jesus lived or did not live. The main thing was that the ideas were being born to the world that he represented. So at that time of Jesus, the whole atmosphere was pregnant with the expectancy of a Savior to come. And everybody thought that he would give birth to the Savior. Therefore, one was always in doubt if Jesus was the Savior, because so many mothers said, I am expecting the Savior, and this is the Savior. And one wasn't quite sure who was really now the Christ. And only after a long time it sorted out that Jesus was the Christ. So one can see that the atmosphere is pregnant with an idea, and then there is somewhere a transparent point where it can shine through. If Mrs. Eddy hadn't come, somebody Eddy would have come. The point is not Mrs. Eddy, the point is the idea. The idea has a history. And the idea had a history and said, the time is getting ripe in this period of science that the true science should come through. And so the true science was sent. The idea of science of the Christ was sent. And it found in Mrs. Eddy a transparency, a clear transparency. And her whole life was geared towards the point of being so pure and transparent that the clarity and the exactness of this science could shine through and be put down in the textbook as a text. So this is the evolution. And again we see we have not an evolution of thought, we have an evolution of an idea, where the limitations of thought are given up, and the more the limitations of thought are given up, the more we arrive at the point of ideas.